In his award acceptance speech of 1917, Nobel Prize winning physicist Max Planck reminded us that what we see as matter in the world around us originates and exists only by virtue of a force. And he goes on to say that we must assume behind this force the existence of a conscious and an intelligent mind, that this mind is what we call the matrix of all matter. Well, what Max Planck called that matrix in 1917 is what physicists today are beginning to simply call the field. This field of intelligence is a neutral energy. And when you think about this field, I'm going to invite you to think of it in its neutrality. It's not that the field likes us or that the field doesn't like us. The field doesn't judge our actions or our beliefs, our thoughts, feelings, emotions as right or wrong feelings or good or bad feelings. It is simply a mirror. You can think of it as a pulsating, shimmering, glimmering, shining, throbbing, living substance that sends back to us in each moment of each day the energy of what we send to the field by the way we live our lives. You've grasped a very good metaphor for precisely how this field works. It simply returns what we have offered as the blueprint for the relationships that we bring into our lives. In other words, the energy, not the actions, the energy of the way we live our lives, the integrity or the truthfulness or our violence and fear becomes the magnet that draws like energies and like experiences as situations and circumstances and people and relationships around us. Every time I share this analogy, the principle reminds me of a movie that was called The Abyss, where an alien life form, an energy form, is found on the bottom of the ocean, and it is simply an energy form to express. It has to make itself known through whatever substance is most abundant, and at the bottom of the ocean, where the divers found the life, that substance happens to be water. So in the movie, there is a place where this energy form expresses itself through a tube of water that is moving through the corridors of the investigator's ship. And as this life form meanders along those corridors, it reflects the subtle movements and the facial expressions of the people that come face to face with it. So when they have fear on their face, the tube of water, this mirror of water, reflects that fear back to them so they can see it. Or the joy in their face at understanding that they're seeing a form from another world. So this simple, perhaps, example of how water in the movie The Abyss was mirroring the expressions of the investigators is, again, a very simple metaphor for perhaps how this field works in our lives. Well, while scientists now recognize the existence of the field, they're asking the next question. They're saying, what does it mean? And how do we use it? I've had the opportunity to be in a number of conferences and programs with scientists and physicists and investigators who now are certain beyond any reasonable doubt that this field is there, and they're asking the next question in terms of how we apply it in our lives. Well, in the words of their time, the ancients, those who have come before us, offer us insight into both these questions in terms of what the field means and how we use it in our lives. They offer us precise instructions describing to us how we may interpret the behavior of this field in response to the choices we make in our lives and the way we live our lives, how we can read the field in each moment of each day. In speaking the lost language of God, I spent some time describing a sect that is known as the ancient Essenes, the scholars of the Dead Sea Scrolls. And I'll briefly encapsulate that discussion here because it is through the eyes of the Essenes we will develop the new concepts of the mirrors describing how our world is communicating with us what we have spoken into the field. 2,500 years ago, a mysterious group of scholars, mystics, and holy people set themselves apart from the world around them. And they built communities outside of Jerusalem along the shores of the Dead Sea so that they could live the principles of an ancient teaching the way that they chose to live them. These people were known during their time by the Egyptians as the therapeutae, or the healers, and chose to live a life that strictly honored the most ancient wisdom traditions that they knew of their time. Today, we know this sect as the ancient Essenes, E-S-S-E-N-E-S, for those that may not be familiar with the term. Much of what we know about the Essenes today comes from us, from two primary sources. One, the writings of the Roman historian Josephus, and secondly, from the discovery of what is now called the greatest archaeological find of the 20th century, the Dead Sea Scrolls. In their texts, the Essenes left us keys to understanding our relationship with the field that is everywhere all the time, and they included very precise instructions describing how we use this field in our lives. This is a little history of how we know what we know. The keys were later incorporated into the Gnostic traditions of the first and the second centuries, such as those that were found in Egypt's Nag Hammadi library, and I'm going to focus on some of those teachings, specifically the Lost Gospel of Thomas, discovered in the late 1940s. And through the eyes of the Essenes, we will identify a series of mirrors, five mirrors, describing in broad, general categories the kinds of relationships, key relationships that we experience personally, professionally, and collectively, reflections from the world around us of what are perhaps our truest or what are called the core beliefs within us. And through the use of personal stories and true accounts, case histories, together we'll explore the specifics of what these mirrors mean to us in our lives. The value of this, our ability to recognize these mirrors in our businesses, in our careers, in our families, our romance, and our health, is that by doing so, we allow the events of our own lives to become our own spiritual guides. Our own lives lead us to understand our beliefs regarding ourselves and others without having to ask someone else or reference someone else or have someone else interpret them for us. We become our own guides and our own best guides. So these beliefs include the things that we judge, the things that we long for, the things that we miss, the things that we hold dear in life, sometimes beliefs that aren't so easy to see from our own personal perspectives. All, however, ultimately leads us to understand our true relationship with ourselves, with the world around us, and ultimately with the force that many call God. So one of the things that makes the mirrors of life so interesting is that they are not confined to the relationship where they're first recognized. They represent patterns that often spill over from one relationship of our lives into others. For example, if by going through these mirrors you identify a breach of trust that you recognize in a business or a financial relationship, that same mirror may well be playing out in your friendships, in your personal relationships, in your romance, in your experience with your siblings, and vice versa. So the mirrors, they are two-way mirrors, and it's not uncommon to discover that once a pattern is recognized and addressed in one area of life, that all of the other relationships echoing that same pattern quickly find their own resolution and disappear. In other words, it's not necessary to go back and address this mirror in every single relationship. By seeing it once, what happens is that as we recognize it, the glue that pulls, the magnet that pulls other people into our lives mirroring the same conditions, once we recognize it once, all of those other patterns will very quickly fall away. So the value of identifying the mirrors and offering examples of how they work through true accounts and case histories is that you can use these as templates in your own life, and you can understand your own circumstances and make sense of what may perhaps be some of the most painful, sometimes some of the most mysterious, perhaps unexpected experiences of your life. So with our knowledge of the discoveries that I mentioned in segment one, we mentioned the intelligent field that's everywhere all the time. We mentioned the intelligence in ourselves, including the ancient name of God. And in segment two, we spoke about the principle of resonance. With these principles in mind, let's now look at the ancient Essenes and how they used these principles to describe the complex relationships that we have with one another. Let's begin the Essene mirrors of relationship. The Lost Gospel of Thomas from the Nag Hammadi Library. This first mirror is identified with a single sentence. It simply goes, "You read the face of the sky and of the earth, that you have not recognized how to read this moment. The author of this quote is saying that we spend our time trying to interpret the world around us and our past and our future, and we haven't even recognized what the very moment, the present, is saying to us. This is a reference to the most obvious of the mirrors, the mystery of the first mirror of relationship, the mirror of the moment. What I've found over the years is that when the subject of mirrors comes up in conversation, this first mirror is the one that's commonly identified. It's the one that commonly comes to mind. It was first identified by relationship experts in the 1960s, and many of them believed that once this mirror was identified, it was the only mirror, and they stopped there. This is the mirror that says to us, when we find ourselves surrounded by people or situations or circumstances where we see a lot of anger, or people are frustrated, they're negative, they're difficult to work with, this mirror suggests that those around us are reflecting us, our own anger, our own frustration, our own negativity, our own difficulties. This is the most direct of the mirrors. It simply suggests if you don't like what the world is showing you in a given moment, look to yourself, because there's a good chance that others, as individuals, groups, and situations, may, and I'm going to emphasize may, be reflecting back to you the very patterns that you've become within yourself. Sometimes these are patterns that you identify so strongly with that it's hard to even recognize them in yourself. For example, the need to control is a great example of this kind of mirror. When you find yourself in a situation where you need to control the conditions around you, what you're saying is that you need to control the external factors of life to feel safe in your world. I'm going to be very clear. This is not right, wrong, good, or bad. It simply is a pattern. We're looking at how it's expressed. So if you're a person that feels the need to control your world so that you are safe, there's a good possibility you'll find yourself in situations where others are going to try to control you in varying degrees. You'll find yourself in a job situation with supervisors that micromanage every moment of your day. You'll find yourself in families with children that interpret your family rules as control upon them, and they will resist them to the nth degree. You'll find yourself in friendships and surrounded by people that need to set the parameters. Everywhere you go, everything you do, if you're going to have a night out, they're going to plan everything down to the moment, socially. Perhaps even in your own family, you'll find issues where one person has to control all the finances, all the checkbooks, all the authority. And again, none of these is right, wrong, good, or bad. They are simply ways of understanding in the world around us what we may be expressing from within us. This first mirror, it's the most obvious, it's the most direct, and it simply suggests that the quality of events surrounding you at any given moment in time may be reflecting specific beliefs that you hold in that moment of time. Often, simply by recognizing the mirror, this is all that's needed for the charge that brings that mirror to you, the magnet that draws those relationships in, to dissipate, and those that control you, you'll find will fade from your life. So while it is possible that the behavior of the people around you may be mirroring your attitudes, your bias, your beliefs, it's also possible that another mirror, a more subtle mirror, may be playing out. So to make this distinction, you must ask yourself a simple question. When you find yourself in the situations and you are surrounded by people who are pushing every button that you have, where you find people trying to control everything that you do, as honestly and truthfully as you can, answer this one question. Are the people around me, those pushing my buttons, showing me who I am in this moment? And when you ask that from within, before you even have the question asked, an answer will come back to you and you'll know a yes or a no. And if the answer to that question honestly is no, if those people aren't showing you yourself in the moment, then it's very possible they may be showing you a more subtle mirror, the second mirror of relationship. And this is the second seen mirror of judgment. In the Lost Gospel of Thomas, in the Nag Hammadi Library, the author wrote, "Recognize what is in your sight, and that which is hidden from you will become plain to you." And this is a beautiful insight into the power of this mirror. I think perhaps this mirror is best shared through three stories, three people that came into my life in 1992, all during the same period of time. With each person, I shared a very different kind of relationship. With one of them was a business relationship, one was a friendship, one was a romance. And I should have known something was up when all three of these people came into my life at the same time, because almost immediately, all three began to push my buttons. Every button that I had, some that I never even knew I had, this was my first clue that something was up. The business relationship, it made sense at the time. They were people that came into my life and offered to take care of the details for my book tours and my seminars, venue selection, ticket sales, bookkeeping, etc. It was something that was very welcome, because I'd been trying to do all of these things myself while I was doing the presentations as well. The friendship was a combination of both friendship and business. I live in a remote property in northern New Mexico, and this man came into my life. He was an amazing carpenter and a craftsman. And he agreed to live on my land in exchange for overseeing the property while I was traveling, and that worked well for me, as well as adding carpentry and support, ongoing renovation of the old adobe buildings that were on the property. So at the time, this relationship made tremendous sense as well. I'm sharing these details because often these little details are the flags that come up in our lives. In the moment the relationship begins, it makes tremendous sense. And as we move through the relationship, you will see how these mirrors are playing out and how they couldn't have played out any other way. The romance was with a woman that had come into my life. And I believe that we shared enough of the same visions and the same goals and the same values in life that it made sense to live together and work together toward those common goals. Almost immediately, each one of those began to irritate me just beyond belief. Well, in my denial of what was happening, I discounted the tension that I was feeling in each relationship. I attributed it to my travel schedules and just to the intensity of my life. Each time I left on a trip, I thought maybe when I came home, the problems would go away. Well, that simply isn't the case. Shortly after returning from a series of seminars, I found myself struggling in my business relationship. I was on the phone with a spreadsheet in my hand, fighting for my share of the tour proceeds, line item by line item. And I was having this conversation with people that I had believed represented my best interest in the beginning. During the same week, I discovered that the man who was living on my property was pursuing a series of interests that were not only in direct opposition to our agreement, the agreement that we had of him being on the property, they were frowned upon by the state of New Mexico. It is probably the best way that I can say what was happening here. And it was during this time as well that when I would go on a trip, I'd go out of town and present my seminars. I had a routine that I would follow on the way home. My routine, when I'd come in through the airport, is I'd pick my bags up from the baggage, I'd stop at the ATM machine, get money for parking, gas, begin the four-hour drive back to my home and to get my groceries. Well, on this trip, however, everything came to a screeching halt. Something changed. I picked up my bags from the baggage, I went to the ATM to make my withdrawal, and there was absolutely nothing there in the account. This was on a Sunday night. I would do the programs on the weekend. And I knew that there had to be a mistake, and I also knew that that mistake wouldn't be clarified at 10 o'clock on a Sunday night. I made some promises to the parking attendant to pay my fee at a later time, and I began the long drive home Monday morning. I called the bank to clarify the mistake on my account, and what I found was that it wasn't a mistake at all. The account not only had a zero balance, there were 75 overdrafts that had been written on that account. Everyone had a charge of $25. The romantic relationship in my life had left and taken everything with her. And at that moment, I could no longer ignore whatever those relationships were showing me. If you want signs in your life, sometimes the signs happen in very unexpected and very obvious ways. Well, I came home from the bank that day and I went for a long walk. It's a beautiful mountain behind our property, the 10,039-foot peak in northern New Mexico. And I go down this road, and sometimes I can write an entire book during that walk in my mind. Then I have to come back and put it on paper in the computer. And it was during that walk that I really had the opportunity to go inside. I knew that there was a pattern that was being shown to me. And in retrospect, it's a simple pattern, Not knowing that at the moment, however, this is my opportunity to search that pattern out and recognize it. And I did what I do so frequently. I simply asked from within. I asked the question, what are these relationships showing me in this moment? What are the patterns that they're showing me? What characteristic has each of these people shown me in their actions? Because I knew if the mirrors of relationship work, that maybe these people were showing me something about myself. In my mind's eye, before I even finished the questions, four characteristics flashed in front of me when I said, what are they showing me? And the words were simply honesty, integrity, truthfulness, and trust. Those are the words that came into my mind. Well, I thought to myself, if the mirrors work the way we think that they work, then are these people, are these relationships showing me something that I'm lacking in myself? Are they showing me that somehow I am lacking in my honesty, my integrity, my truthfulness, and my trust, and my dealings with others? And before I even got that question out, I felt a heat begin to rise from inside of me. I felt it in my stomach, and it rose up through my chest. And there was an anger, of course, that they're not showing me what I am in the moment. I have all of those things. They're the foundation of my life, and my work is based on those principles. And in the same instant of time, I realized that I was being shown the second mirror of relationship. I realized that the three people that had come into my life were skillfully and masterfully mirroring something much more subtle. Rather than mirroring what I was in the moment, they were showing me the things that I judged in that moment. It wasn't that I was being dishonest or untruthful with people in my relationships. It's that I had a tremendous charge on those characteristics and other. I felt that everyone that I do business with should be honest and truthful and have integrity in the things that they do. Suddenly, in that moment, the judgments returned from all the times in my life, all the times where those principles have been violated. I began to remember, even from childhood, combinations of where honesty, integrity, truthfulness, and trust hadn't worked out the way I'd expected them. I began to remember past romances who weren't truthful about the way they'd lived their lives, adult promises made while I was a child and were never kept. Began to remember friends and mentors who'd made well-intentioned promises and they couldn't keep them either. And on that day, what I found was that the subtle patterns that had become more blatant over the years, and that's the way these mirrors work, they become less and less subtle. The subtle patterns that became more and more blatant over the years, the patterns that I had ignored in the past, on that day, I couldn't ignore them any longer. They couldn't be missed. I was being shown the mirror of the very things that I judge, that I've got the greatest charge upon in my life. And I was shown in a way that had to be acknowledged and healed to continue with my life because everything had come to a stop. Well, that was a powerful day for me. The next day, I went to visit a friend living on a nearby pueblo. He's a shop owner in northern New Mexico. I'd known him for quite a while, and we'd share stories about our lives. And he asked me about my life. He said, what's going on in your life, Greg? And I shared with him the story of the three people, the business relationship, the friendship, and the romance. And he listened carefully, and he thought about it for a moment, and he said, I'm going to share a story with you. He said, my great-grandfather was one of the pioneering tribes that came across the plains of northern New Mexico hundreds of years ago. And his first prize as a young adult to demonstrate his ability to become a man in his community was the killing of a buffalo. And to commemorate the killing of that buffalo, he had kept the head and preserved that head and had been passed down through the generations until it reached me. And it was his most prized possession. He had it hanging in his shop, and he would share it with people who came in and tell them the story of his ancestors. One day, a gallery owner from Taos came in. She was a jewelry gallery owner. She saw that buffalo head, and she asked the owner, my friend, if she could use that buffalo head to display some very rare Pueblo jewelry that was on display in her shop. And he said, certainly. And he shared with her the head of his great-grandfather's buffalo, and she took it into town. And a few weeks passed, and he hadn't heard from her. He found himself going to her shop to find what had happened, and her doors were locked, the windows were soaked, and she'd left town. She'd taken his prized possession with her, the head of his great-grandfather's buffalo. And I listened to my friend's story, and I said, well, what did you do? someone had wronged you, what did you do in return? And what he said next was such a powerful lesson for me. He said, I did nothing. He said, because she lives with what she has done. Well, I thought about that when I left the Pueblo that day. Over the next days and weeks, I thought about my options of trying to get the money back from the woman that had taken it from me and what it would mean in terms of legal implications and extending and prolonging the relationship. And in the end, I took my friend's advice and I did nothing because I knew that she would live with what she had done. Well, within just a couple of days of making that decision in my mind and in my heart, something interesting began to happen. As I chose to honor those three people in what they had shown me without judging them for what they had done. In other words, as I found a way to allow them to show me their lack of integrity or their lack of truthfulness in our relationship, as I found a way to recognize that without judging it as right or wrong or good or bad, within a few days they began to fade from my life with no conscious effort on my part at all. No conscious effort to drive them away or to end the relationships. And what I found is that my charge of the judgment had been the glue that was keeping them in my world. It's what I call the cascading effect. And without getting even or having retribution in any one of the three relationships, all three of them found resolution and resolved within just a few days of me finding that place within myself where I could allow those characteristics and those qualities in other people. Well, it was interesting because I even found that the bank waived all of the $25 fees for each of the 75 checks. The man that was living on my property chose to leave the property, and before he did, he honored every promise that he had made in our relationship and left me with beautiful crafts, beautiful furniture that he had crafted in his own shop. The business relationship met me halfway and found a way to make the tour of the West Coast that I had just completed, my 30-day tour, to make it worthwhile so I could at least cover the mortgage on the property where I was living. And all this happened within just a few days of my coming to terms with what these relationships meant to me. These were beautiful validations of the second Essene mirror of relationship, the mirrors of the things that we judge. So I'm going to invite you to look into your life and think about this mirror. Look at the people that you have masterfully and skillfully drawn into your life, some that you may hold dear, friendships, supervisors, coworkers, boyfriends, girlfriends, husbands, wives. Now, look to the ones that irritate you the most. Look to the ones that irritate you to no end and ask yourself, are these people showing me myself in this moment? Are the things that they do showing me who I am in the moments that I'm with them? And if you can answer this question truthfully and honestly with the word no, then there's a very good possibility that lying at the core of your irritation with them and all the buttons that are being pushed, you will find a powerful clue about yourself. Because the source of your irritation may be the mirror of those qualities of character that you've judged in others, that you have a charge on, as well as judging it within yourself. The second Essene mirror of a relationship, the mirror of the things that we judge. So identify the things that these people do in their lives and do your best to find the broad general themes that the specifics represent. In my case, for example, there were issues of trust, honesty, integrity. Now, ask yourself if you have a charge on these themes. Don't be surprised if you feel a surge of emotion that wells up inside of you as you ask the question, because these are the very qualities of life that your life is asking you to recognize right now without judging in others. Once we have the wisdom to recognize the mirror of the things that we judge in others, we now have a direct window into the very things we judge within ourselves. It's not uncommon to find that simply recognizing how the mirror works and doing nothing else, seeing firsthand how it's playing out in our lives, is enough in and of itself for the mirror to dissipate. I remember when I was shopping for automobiles when I was living in Colorado. I began looking for Jeep Cherokees. I didn't know much about them. I hadn't seen many of them. I went to a dealer showroom and went through all the different models and saw all the different qualities that made each model unique. And once I left that showroom, I saw Jeep Cherokees everywhere. They were in parking lots, at the supermarket, in the theaters. They were in the parking lots of my office place. I saw them on the freeways. They'd always been there. I simply hadn't recognized them until they were pointed out to me. And in this way, often the mirror of the things that we judge are all around us, the varying degrees in each moment of each day, and it's only when they are pointed out to us and we recognize them in the first time that we find those mirrors and we find that they are healed in our acknowledgement of their existence. So it's the recognition of the mirror itself and our willingness to follow the mirrors to even deeper levels that leads us into the more subtle mirrors. So the next section begins by describing a very different kind of mirror, one that is perhaps deceptively simple in its power to heal. So I invite you to join me for our next segment as we explore the mirrors of our greatest fears, our greatest losses, and how we are mysteriously drawn into situations where those mirrors and our losses and our fears show us how we can reclaim our greatest healing.